As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was good.
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, look no further than the Marketing School podcast, hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast on Apple and number 15 on business in the United States. Now, if you want to listen to interesting conversations with operators that have been there, done that, also with other interesting guests, then listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, everybody, this is High Speed Stuff, and I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks.com.
My name is Ben Bolin. I am a video writer here at the same website.
How you doing, Ben?
I'm stoked, man. It's awesome to be back in the booth again.
Are you really? You're stoked?
Yeah.
Stoked.
You cleaned up pretty nice.
Kids saying that now these days?
Oh, man. I'm trying to bring it back. You know, you guys, Scott looks pretty clean cut today. You got a haircut.
Finally got that haircut we were talking about. Yeah, I'm spiffing up a little bit. Dress needs some work, but I'm getting on it.
And one of our chairs in the studio actually has a little bit of a sliding forward thing. So sometimes when it sounds like Scott and I are doing this intro, no, you know what I'm talking about, dude. It's like the back end of the chair.
I gave it to you this time.
Yeah. So that's why it sounds a little awkward because we always have that. Who's getting that chair?
Someone's falling out of the chair.
Doesn't matter who you are.
Yeah.
Someone's going.
Slide under the table.
We're here to talk about emergencies today, right?
Definitely.
Bigger than slidey chairs.
Yeah. And this is something that I got to tell you, I think. From the point that everybody is a little child, they love watching emergency vehicles on the road. I mean, it means that somebody's having a bad day, of course.
Sure.
But I love watching fire trucks. I love following fire trucks. I'm kind of embarrassed to admit it, but I'll follow a fire truck to a fire to see if it's close.
Even now?
Even now. I did this, as a matter of fact, 2 weekends ago. I followed one, but it was just going down the road, and I could see the smoke billowing over the road. There was someone's backyard and one of those fiberglass fences.
Yeah.
It had melted in this big fire. It was like a big grass fire and where trees were catching and everything. But the smoke was a big, huge cloud of white smoke going across six lanes of road with a median, and you couldn't see across it. So, of course, I had to poke my nose around, see what was going on. Mm-hmm. They already had it. We got there in, 30 seconds after the fire truck was there, and they already had it under control. They're quick.
I've got to ask you, Scott. Yeah. Were you following them because of some do-gooder impulse?
No, you know what? This is from a long, long time ago. I used to live in Indiana. Mm-hmm. And my dad, I think my dad got it from his mother, honestly, my grandmother, who's still around. She had this impulse that whenever they heard, a small town in Indiana.
Yeah.
Whenever the fire trucks were called out, she had this impulse that, hey, let's go see what's going on, or let's try to check it out. And he got that kind of from her, and I got it from him because we would travel out into the country and watch huge barn fires happening and really spectacular fires at night. And sometimes you'd see some horrible things like, livestock and things like that in them. But oftentimes it's just a big, beautiful fire. I mean, I know it's awful to say that
because
somebody's losing property or animals or whatever. But you're talking about these enormous 150-year-old barns, 200-year-old barns are burning in the middle of this really, really dark Indiana night, just out in the middle of nowhere. Honestly, and I hate to say it, it was beautiful. It really was.
I'm going to do you a solid here, bro, and assure all the listeners that Scott Benjamin is in no way an arsonist.
No, I'm not like that at all. I mean, it was just something interesting to watch, especially when you're a kid. Imagine all that activity and the excitement involved.
And
with that.
Also, especially if you're in a small town, odds are there's a very compelling reason to find out what is on fire because you probably know everybody.
Could be a neighbor.
Yeah, and it could very easily affect your life, especially if it's close knit.
Sure. How about you? You had a kind of a interest in watching emergency vehicles?
Absolutely fascinated by them, especially fire trucks, because I always wondered ever since I was a wee tyke. I always wondered what was going on inside the fire engines, because you know when you're a kid, they just seem so cool. There's so much stuff inside of it. Mm-hmm. And there's this entire crew of people. I always thought the coolest seat was the one in the back. You know, the guy who stands. I would never want to be there now. Oh, yeah. But before I ever had to drive, I thought it would be awesome. I didn't know that he was actually doing something. I just thought, you know how like when you're a kid and you're in school and some kid gets to be in the front of the line because he or she did something. Mm-hmm. I thought that was like a prize for the firefighters.
They get to stand on the back?
Yeah, they got to go in the fun seat. No, they're doing work.
How about the one driving in the back? Have you ever seen that on the?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh,
that guy.
Driving. Oh, I think I heard about the ones hanging on the back.
The longer, more rectangular ones.
Oh, yeah, that would be fun.
And it's really interesting because I still have this childhood fascination with fire engines. Mm-hmm. Because there's, if you look at it, we've got some great articles on the site, and one of the things that really struck me here is our authors say that the important thing to know about a fire engine, I'm quoting here, is that it's a combination of a personnel carrier, a toolbox, and a water tanker.
Ah, yes. All very at important. Once. The toolbox aspect of a fire engine is extremely critical. Mm-hmm. You mentioned yourself how it seemed like there's a lot going on inside a fire truck, right?
Yeah.
Everything has a place, and everything in its place is a good way to describe this thing, because it has to be exactly where they know it is. I mean, they have to learn that truck inside and out. They have to know exactly where everything is, what size hoses there are, the connectors, where the tools are, everything. Any imaginable scenario they need to be able to take care of in the dark, you know, at a fire scene where there could be, you know, smoke blocking view, blocking vision. They have to be able to communicate with the rest of the fire department, the rest of their group, be able to tell them, you know, what they need exactly and where to find it. And, you know, there's a lot of communication that happens on a fire truck that you and I don't see when they're just passing, you know, at 80 miles an hour on the side streets.
Right. I think it would be fair to say that most people don't really know everything that goes into it.
Yeah.
So I've got a little list here if you want.
Fantastic.
Okay. I'm just going to run through some of the stuff that firefighters have to take, because, you know, human beings, fire is not our natural element. Mm-hmm. Just in case somebody is wondering, don't do it. Put the matches down. and we have to have, when we're fighting any kind of conflagration or something, we have to have a lot of tools to get it out safely with a minimum amount of property damage and hopefully no loss of life. Mm-hmm. So a lot of this stuff is related to the hoses, to the transportation of water and foam, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to read some of these. Stop me if one catches your interest.
Sure.
Barrel strainers. You know, that's just what you put on a hard suction hose when you're taking water from a lake or a pond.
Oh, okay.
So you don't end up spraying fish or something.
If you don't have a hydrant.
Right.
Got it.
Right. So nozzles, of course, depending on the kind of water coverage you need. A foam inductor to put a kind of flame retardant foam on there. A Halligan tool, which is kind of like a crowbar. A sheetrock puller. Pike poles. And these are about 10 to 12 feet long and are thrust into the ceiling to pull sheetrock down.
Oh, those are that's that cool hook-looking tool they got, right?
Yeah.
With a spike on one end and a hook on the other?
Yep.
Oh, very cool.
Which is almost medieval in design, if you think about it.
It looks like it almost looks like a whaling tool or something like that they would use.
Spear. I, not being a fireman myself, I cannot speak to any allegations of fires that could be attributed to whales, but it's good to be prepared, you know? They're very smart animals.
It just looked like that to me anyways.
I'm sorry.
Looks like a harpoon maybe.
And then they got EMS equipment. We know that because every firefighter has EMS training, you know? Mm-hmm. And then there's some hose adapters, a bunch of different wrenches because, of course, as we all know from being kids and trying to open fire hydrants, you can't do it with your ordinary wrench.
Did you try to do that?
Of course I did, man.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Were you ever around when someone has opened one?
Yep.
Legally or illegally?
Illegally, Scott.
Really?
Yep.
I've never been to either. I've never seen anybody open one legally or illegally. Only on television I've seen
it. I didn't see them open it. I was there after it was open.
Replaying it?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Did the I don't know, the city members come by and scold you or anything? Or did the firemen show
up? You know
up
what?
Because how long can something like that last?
You know what? You would be surprised because perhaps memory is putting a sort of golden hue on this, but mm-hmm. or a rose-tinted hue. But we played in it for an afternoon. I was quite young. This was in the burbs.
Hmm.
And then we just went home.
Yeah, good for you. I had water fights with, you know, hoses and things, but never, mm-hmm. Never a fire hydrant.
That's cool, man. It's
a neat memory.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I feel kind of bad about it since, you know, now I know what a fire hydrant is for.
Well, you know what? They do have to release pressure in those things occasionally, and they clean them out, so maybe you're doing a service.
Oh, man. Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you. We're even now because you assure people that I wasn't stealing fire hydrant water.
No, I don't think so.
And I let them know you're not an arsonist. Jaws of Life as well.
Oh, yeah, Jaws of Life.
Which is – we could do a whole podcast on that thing one day.
Yep.
Exhaust fan and then salvage covers, which was really interesting. They can cover furniture and stuff on a lower floor if there's a fire on a higher floor.
No kidding.
Yeah, so you can – there's a bigger chance that you can keep some of your stuff.
Really? So one team kind of runs in and covers everything up real quick?
Well, now the team
– No, I'm not kidding. I mean, really, has that happened? Because I've never heard of this.
Well, the way that the fire teams actually work is a little bit different, I think, depending on the blaze. But this, they do have the capacity to salvage some things, which usually when we see fires, we see them gutted out, you know, with just the frame remaining. Yeah. I think just recently, up the street from our mysterious location, Studio 1A, there was a house fire.
No kidding.
Yeah, fires happen all the time, right? So the other stuff, they have bolt cutters, sledgehammers, fire extinguisher, who saw that one coming, water cooler, and usually two ladders.
Kind of funny they carry a fire extinguisher.
I mean, can you imagine? You could die from the irony alone if your fire engine
But I guess, I don't know, it makes sense, I guess. I mean, it holds something like that because you don't want to hit somebody with a, you know, 95 gallon per minute hose if you don't need to.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Makes sense. Blast them back a little bit.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? One other thing they carry is breathing apparatus.
Oh, yeah. We should have done that.
The thing about this is they've – it's like scuba only without the U, without the underwater part. It's like a self-contained breathing apparatus. So it's SCBA. But they carry those, and they carry 30 minutes of air, I believe, is what they have. And they're already in the truck ready to go. They just kind of turn around, put them on, and head back into the fire. So that's critical for them to be able to, you know, rescue people and, you know, get in and see what's going on in there.
So
it gives them the advantage that we don't have. You know, if you're in the fire, trying to crawl around, you know, you may succumb to the smoke and, you know, just the fumes, and allows them to spend a little more time in there.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, unless the condition of the building deteriorates.
You know, one thing we didn't mention, and we probably should, is that some trucks actually carry water.
Oh, yes.
Some carry – a lot of them can carry – 1,000 gallons or even up to 5,000 gallons of water to the scene so they can instantly begin fighting the fire without finding a, you know, a hydrant or another location to draw water from, like you said, like a stream or a pond or anything that's in the area, even a pool they can draw water from. Think about a fire truck as just like a big water pump. It's just a way of facilitating getting water from one reservoir through the truck and onto the fire where it has to go. And they used to do that a long time ago with even water bucket brigades.
Yes.
Which you'll find if you do a search online, a keyword search online, you'll find a lot of these old leather buckets that fire chiefs used to keep. I don't know if they probably still have them around as relics, you know, at the firehouses. But they really would, you know, fill up buckets and hand them man to man from the nearest available water source to take them to the fire and dump them on one at a time, and that's how they fought fires at one point. They had hand-drawn, you know, hand-pulled carts that had a small reservoir of water.
Right,
it had just kind of a wooden box on top of big wheels, like big cart wheels, and they were either horse-drawn or human-drawn. They would you know, run them to the fire. The sprinters would carry them.
That's so nuts. We're talking about a rickshaw, basically.
Yeah, a rickshaw with I don't know, 100 gallons of water on it or something like that. And then they would hand pump the water through one single hose, and that's how they fought the fire. You know, houses were made of wood, of course, almost every one of them. You know, some were stone, but wood and stone. So a lot of houses, I'm sure, didn't make it because of that.
And buildings are also a lot larger now. So
Yeah, with the high rises and things we're talking about, you know, fighting. So they have a lot more modern equipment now, of course, but they had steam-powered pumps at one point. Around the turn of the century.
Steam-powered, huh?
Steam-powered, yeah. It was just a way of getting rid of the hand-pumping function that, you know, humans were providing. So they had these steam-powered pumps, which are pretty neat-looking, really. I think those are maybe my favorite to look at, is the old steam-powered pumps. Usually horse-drawn because they're quite heavy.
Yeah.
But they were on a wagon, and it's just, I guess, a steam-powered water pump, really, is all it amounts to.
Now, let me check with you on that one before we move on, because what's perplexing to me here is that if the goal of the pump is to get water to a blaze and kill the fire, it seems to me that you would be losing a lot of water by using steam.
No. I know it sounds kind of counterintuitive that they'd be using that to power the vehicle, but if you think about the steam-powered cars of the day, you fill a reservoir that's, you know, like about the size of a washing machine.
Okay.
And that is then used. It's just like a steam-powered automobile would be in that, you know, you prime it, get it ready. We talked about these in the past.
Oh, in terms of the ratio then.
Exactly, yeah. This is just to drive the motor, the pump, to get the fluid flowing. So then once they get the steam-powered pump there, then they would find a source of water, whether it's somebody bringing water in a reservoir like we talked about, or if they were pumping it from a river or lake, you know, that's how they did it. But the pump itself was steam-powered, and it was just like the steam-powered automobiles of the day. So they're using relatively small amounts of water to run this thing. They could run it 24 hours a day if they wanted to.
Not a bang for the buck.
Yeah, it's just like an automobile where they just kept it going so that it was ready to go.
See, what's interesting, the hoses I guess we'll use the terminology that the firefighting professionals use, lines, right?
Lines, yep.
Yeah, they call them lines. It's so weird because I did not know that there were so many different types of hoses.
You know, I didn't know this either until I started digging into this stuff. And these guys really know their stuff, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, they're not just running out there with a garden hose and high hopes, guys.
No. These guys are true professionals. They know all about what type of fitting they need, what rate of flow they're going to need to fight a particular fire, what particular nozzle they need to fight the fire. When we talk about the hoses that they use most commonly, they're called crosslays. And those are capable of 95 gallons per minute flow, which is pretty significant when you think about it. But if they're on a pumper truck, you know, a tanker truck, rather, where they have 1,000 gallons, it only gives them about 10 minutes where they're trying to – where they're able to fight with the water that they've got on board. They have to find an alternate source, like a fire hydrant nearby.
That's a nice math there, Mr. B.
Well, it was close. It's similar. And, you know, it's close to that anyway. Yeah. They may back it off a little bit, but and they may not even need more than that. That might be enough to fight the entire fire. So – every situation is completely different, but what are some of the other ones, Ethan?
Oh, there's also, there's also the booster line, and that's the smallest hose on the truck. And then that's sort of a, that's where if you don't want to take out the big guns, the crosslay, you end up taking this guy, and its diameter is about an inch, so it's about a half inch smaller than the crosslays, and this is for things like smaller wood fires, or, chimney fires, maybe if you have a shed of some sort.
Oh, okay.
Something like that.
All right. Smaller, I understand. Okay. All right. Well, it makes sense. They want to bring out the smallest they need, really, to make it work. They don't want to hit somebody with this next one they're talking about, the water cannon.
Oh, God. Yes. It's my favorite. Go.
Deluge gun.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So doesn't that sound cool? I like to use the deluge gun on some stuff around my house.
King of the water fights.
Wouldn't that be neat?
Well, you could actually really injure somebody with this bad boy.
You know what? You could. Well, the flow rate on that is 1,000 gallons per minute. So
let's
you can imagine.
Think about that.
I know. That's pretty intense, isn't it? That would be a lot of fun to, kind of blast some things around my house.
So you have – if you have that and you're running off a water tank vehicle, I mean, you have 60 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah, 60 seconds with a full –
Full
blast. Now, that's obviously one that they need, you know, either the 5,000-gallon tanker to run any significant amount of time or, have to have an outside
link
source.
Link up to a hydrant
exactly,
or something.
A hydrant or two or three. One other thing about this, you know, before we get too far, I want to mention that There's a system on board that, you know, there's a complicated series of valves and controls and gauges. And so if someone were to turn off a hose in one area, it doesn't automatically feed that amount of water into that other hose so that the firefighter working on the other end, you know, can rely on the amount of water that's coming out there at that time. It doesn't necessarily matter if one gets shut off or added in another place.
You're talking about the supervillain, the puppet master of the fire engine.
Oh, what's – go ahead. What
the mastermind?
The mastermind. That's right. I forgot the name. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. So if he's controlling, you know, who's getting what, you know, what amount of water, one person isn't suddenly – you know, hit with double the amount of water that they had in the hose, and it would, you know, throw them back or down to the ground. Remains constant. Yeah, I would think it would be. Yeah.
Because, I mean, in a lot of houses, you know, you can't, or apartment buildings, if somebody flushes the toilet or they try to take a shower while the washer is on or something, then it can cause pandemonium.
Oh,
yeah, pandemonium is a little strong, How about an unpleasant surprise?
Yeah, I'll go with that. I've had that surprise before where, you know, suddenly the shower goes cold. That's no fun.
Maybe there should be a mastermind for houses.
I think so.
You know what else is actually powered? Let me see how we go into this, Scott. The ladders are hydraulic.
Oh, cool. Very cool. And they've got incredible range on them now. Used to be a lot smaller,
of course,
you know, because they were handheld ladders. So now they've got just intense reach. I mean, what do you think is the max reach, or do you know roughly what they are? I mean, I don't mean to put you on the spot.
No, that's when there's a let's see. Well, our article talks about a ladder that is 105 feet, which to me is very, very tall. Yeah. I mean, I don't
have any shocking numbers or anything like that, but I thought I've heard numbers around the 150-foot mark or even higher.
Wow.
At this point. So maybe they're just, I don't know, you know, how long ago this article was written. We may need to update a little bit, but
yeah.
The reach, I believe, is getting longer and longer because, you know, you get in a city like, I mean, Las Vegas or something like that, or even downtown New York or here in Atlanta, we're high up. Let's just put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, pretty little hope of getting a ladder up this high, I think.
Right.
I'm all for longer reaches on ladders.
Well, you know, this is really interesting. There is actually, if you go out, we have a kind of a deck balcony thing in one part of our office. And if you go out there, you'll see this weird looking metal, gray metal cap.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take it off, it has ties. It has tie-off lines so that you can rappel down.
Oh, no kidding.
No kidding.
I won't be using that.
You won't?
No.
Oh, come on, man. Yeah. It's easier to go down.
I'm going to have to go with one of the – I'm going to get a parachute.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I'll base jump out of here.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll have somebody call in with some advice about base jumping.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the ladders are – everything here in the modern fire engine is – really built to be as convenient, as responsive, as flexible as possible, which is why we have things like masterminds. That's why the controls for the pump that are located on the captain's side of the cab are also, you know, everyone has a clear division of labor and they know how their chain of command works. But the amazing technology behind these ladders, because I was thinking what you were thinking, somebody just – one guy pushing a ladder up against a building and holding it and saying, go, go, go.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not the case.
That's what they had to do a long time ago, but thank goodness they're able to reach a little further now with stuff. And what's cool about that is they've got platforms and also they can extend hoses up to that level so they can fight fire from above.
Oh, yeah, with the hose pack. Right?
Exactly. They can see, they can see what's going on from above. Let's say they get to an industrial fire. They can get above the roof line and spray down onto the fire instead of trying to fight it, you know, coming through the front door.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an easier way to approach things sometimes.
Now, we've kind of covered, I guess, the water tank, and we've covered the mobile toolbox.
Yeah, there's a ton of different types of trucks. I mean,
I'll just run through a few types,
but we don't have to really, you know, dwell on any of these. But I think we're nearly done here. But, I mean, there's mobile command units. There's the fire rescue trucks. There's ladder trucks. There's tower ladders. There's tractor-drawn aerial trucks. There's hook and ladder trucks. There's snorkel trucks. There's, of course, I mentioned tanker trucks. There's the quint and quad trucks. There's the hose layer trucks, which carry nothing but hoses.
Wow.
Just all kinds of rescue vehicles. There are marine vehicles. There's vehicles for airplane landing strips. So the cool thing about this, and this is the last thing I've really got here, because the cool thing I read about some of these airline emergency vehicles, mm-hmm. these firefighting vehicles, is that they've got a nozzle on the end of one of the kind of a boom that they can poke into the fuselage of the jet and spray it like an overhead sprinkler system almost.
Wow.
And it will just fight the fire within the fuselage without them having to go through a doorway or through a window. So they can pierce the outer layer of the airplane and then spray this material inside.
That's amazing.
Fight the fire. It's really cool. Yeah, it's really neat. I mean, it's a big spike. So I would think that you'd have to be careful, you know, make sure no one's still walking around in there or, you know, play the odds, I guess, and just do it because you've got to put out the fire.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you going to do? I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. I that's a touchy situation, but I don't know how far it goes in either. I mean, I know that it gets in. I'm sure it does something to suppress electrical fire and, you know, all that too. So maybe it doesn't go in as far as I think it does. I don't think it's like a big 6-foot spike.
Yeah.
I think it's just something that just gets through the depth that it needs to and releases this foam.
Nerves of steel, man. I got to tell you,
yeah.
I have a tremendous admiration for firefighters.
Mm-hmm.
And
talk
about professionals. I mean, now we know, you know, the listeners know that we also have nerves of steel writing and editing. But but I think when we deal, we don't have to deal with these same situations. They're both probably physically strategically and emotionally demanding. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, we haven't even talked about the physical requirements of the job, really, because those are intense as well. I mean,
yeah.
That's a completely different show. Not our wheelhouse by any means, but those are some athletes out there, I'll tell you.
Yeah, for
they
sure.
Really are.
So I guess that's going to wrap it up for us with a little overview of how these fire rescue vehicles work. Scott.
Yes.
Would you like to do some listener mail?
Maybe a piece or two.
All right, Scott, we have Big Papa writing in from the internet.
Did you say Big Papa?
That's what he calls himself.
Or I thought it was your nickname. For
oh
the
gosh,
no.
No.
Okay.
No. Big Papa
Fair
writes
enough.
In, and I'm going to go ahead and propose that whenever we don't get a point of origin from a listener, we just assume they're from the internet.
Okay.
So Big Papa from the internet writes in about Dumb and Dumber, and I thought this was hilarious, and I told him we had to read this on the air. He just finished our second movie car podcast. And he says, I doubt it's the first time it's been mentioned, but if Dumb and Dumber starred Jim Carrey and Jack Daniels, does that mean I have Jeff Daniels locked in my cupboard?
Oh, boy. Did we make a mistake did we say Jack Daniels from that podcast?
I'm pretty sure it was me.
Oh, boy.
Anyway.
Jim Carrey and Jack Daniels.
Yes, together at last.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for writing in, Big Papa. And to our listeners, thanks for lending us your ears for another fun-filled podcast. If you have any other ideas for an upcoming show or any... What do you think, Scott? Any what?
I don't know.
Right.
I don't know where you're going with this.
Surprise us. Send us an email at highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join How Stuff Works staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The How Stuff Works iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, look no further than the Marketing School podcast, hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast on Apple and number 15 on business in the United States. Now, if you want to listen to interesting conversations with operators that have been there, done that, also with other interesting guests, then listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.